morning, everybody. Thank you for being here. My name is Katie Steele, and I'm one of two deputy directors with the Southwest Regional Climate Hub. And we're based down in New Mexico, Las Cruces, New Mexico. So a little bit of background to the climate hubs before I get started. You may or may not have heard of the climate hubs. But back in 2014, Secretary Vilsack announced the formation of 10 climate hubs. And the purpose was for these climate hubs was for the USDA to find an effective means of providing stakeholders, that's working land managers, whether they be farmers, ranchers, or forest landowners, so providing those stakeholders with information about climate change, water, drought, and land conservation, and all the interconnected issues that affect landowners. So those 10 USDA climate hubs were formed back in 2014 with the intention that they become a conduit for information, providing the information that landholders need, or stakeholders need. So the 10 hubs are distributed across the country. You've got the main hubs, which you can see quite clearly, the northeast, midwest, southeast, southern plains, northern plains, northwest, southwest. Then you've got three specialty hubs, Davis, California for cover crops, specialty crops, northern forests up in Michigan for forests in New England, and surrounding areas, and then you've also got the Caribbean Climate Hub down in Puerto Rico. So each of us have our regions on which we're supposed to concentrate and on which we're supposed to be supplying information that's basically useful for climate-related issues. So the Southwest is quite spectacularly huge. We cover six states, which includes the mainland states, which we consider to be the driest states in the Union, California, Nevada, Utah, Arizona, and New Mexico. But we also cover Hawaii, which is quite different, and then we also cover Pacific Islands in the Western Pacific, those associated with the United States. So we have this vast, vast area to cover. We have got very, very diverse stakeholders, from indigenous peoples to industrial scale agriculture. And if you look at the image on the right here of the mainland states, the red areas indicate the main cropland areas. So unlike anything to the east of the 100th meridian, to the west of the 100th meridian, we're very, very reliant on water, of course, and our access to water. And that means our cropland areas are dispersed. And the biggest one, of course, being in California. So we've got relatively little agriculture in the Southwest, but it's really important to our economy and also to our culture. And coming from New Mexico, I can cite some particular examples. For example, in the northern New Mexico, where you've got the acequias, they might not be incredibly productive, agriculturally speaking, but they actually have a hydrological value. And also, more than that, they have a cultural value. So, vast area, pockets of agriculture, and this stripe, of course, in California, but many, many different important aspects to the agriculture besides productivity. So, one of the things that the climate hubs were asked to do in their first year of existence was to conduct what they called vulnerability assessments. Well, most of us quickly realized that the Southwest Hub, really, we couldn't actually do a quantitative vulnerability assessment on our area. There was too much diversity and too many issues that we needed to hit. So what we did was to just look at the existing science and the existing problems and the existing solutions and put that into a climate change framework. So talking specifically about vulnerability, it has different meanings to different peoples, and it's got quite a lot of semantic discord associated with it. Vulnerability means different things to different people. But the framework that we've followed and the framework that really is coming out as the guiding framework for how we look at vulnerability and come up with solutions is the one I've got here, which is from the IPCC. So when we consider vulnerability, the first two things that we want to consider is exposure and sensitivity. Those two give us potential impact. So exposure is those external factors that are going to cause some kind of damage or perhaps even some beneficial contribution, but usually we're looking at the damage here to your system. And then the sensitivity is how sensitive your system is to that exposure. So a good example might be increasing temperatures, and maize you would assume would be less sensitive to increasing temperatures than wheat crop. So combined exposure and sensitivity give you the potential impact. Now, those three phenomena together don't give you vulnerability. Your vulnerability is also affected by the adaptive capacity of your system. And the adaptive capacity is where the agronomic practices come in, if we're just looking at a cropping system. So what kind of practices can we use to reduce vulnerability? So if we look at crop vulnerability in the Southwest, quite a lot of these apply everywhere. But we're looking at increasing average temperatures, increasing evaporative demand, reducing chilling hours, warmer winters, earlier spring, heat waves, reduced precipitation. In fact, there's just been a very new study recently published saying the chances of a mega drought are just, well, we can expect a mega drought in the next century. Changing in monsoon timing, particularly important for Arizona and New Mexico, reduced snowpack, earlier snow melt, and higher intensity storm events, increased pest disease. It's a bleak outlook if we look at all these potential external changes in the system. And then sensitivity. Well, this brings us back to perhaps some very classical crop research. We're looking at the species range of optimum temperatures, how a crop might withstand water stress, sensitivity of floral initiation to chilling hours. That's particularly important to the nut crops in Hawaii, the macadamia, and also the almonds in California. And then, of course, not just the exposure to temperature and precip, but also how disease and pathogens might increase under a changing climate. So our adaptive capacity. And the last speaker actually mentioned some very good examples, so I won't need to go into too much detail. But adaptive capacity, when we're just looking at a cropping system, might include looking at new heat-tolerant or drought-resistant cultivars, no-till practices, mulches, shade cropping, not so common out here, but we see it being used more and more for coffee, and the particularly the coffee growers in Hawaii. Increased irrigation, I put that here under adaptive capacity, but realistically, is increased irrigation going to be an option that we have in the future? Likely it isn't. So then perhaps more conservative irrigation. Now, the way I've described vulnerability so far really falls under this outcome vulnerability model, which O'Brien in 2007 described. And the adaptive capacity part falls under responses. This is where the agronomic practices come into play. But if we're looking simply at a cropping system and simply at this outcome vulnerability approach, we're keeping a kind of linear. These are the problems. This is how the problems might affect us. This is what we can do about the problems for this particular cropping system. However, in the Southwest, and I mentioned it earlier, we are very diverse. We've got this great diversity in stakeholders. So then we really need to look at the context of how we assess vulnerability in the Southwest. So looking at the agronomic practices, and then how feasible is it for those agronomic practices to be used if we are, say, talking about alfalfa. A large-scale alfalfa grower in Arizona may have much easier access to the kind of innovation and technology to maintain an alfalfa crop under a changing climate, where you see the small farmers in the Rio Grande Valley, perhaps not so much. They might even not grow alfalfa anymore and depend on buying it in. So we're looking at quite a complex situation when you're talking about trying to get to the answers to, or using a vulnerability assessment to supply those adaptive answers, the adaptive capacity, and also to inform policy in how, say, the USDA can support adaptive capacity changes in the for stakeholders. So in the Southwest, and those of you who live here or have worked here know very well there's other issues besides climate change, and those of you who work in extension or talk about climate change to a stakeholder audience know that perhaps there's more important issues than climate change right now. Climate change is the sphere of the scientist and the communicator, but boots on the ground, not necessarily hearing that climate change is a big issue right now. So access to water and water rights, producer demographics, land use changes, conversion of agricultural land to other uses, and access to USDA programs, that's a big issue for native communities, actually getting access to USDA programs. And markets, how market forces are changing. So if we look at all these different issues then and put that in the context of the different scales and the different producers and the different systems within our region, then we see that we must consider climate change impacts in the context of other issues, but also at different scales, at the individual scale, community scale, national scale, and the regional scale. And I stole this diagram from a USAID website, and these guys are pretty much on target, I feel, with the work that they've been doing in the Mekong area. And this diagram just gives you this idea of contextual vulnerability, with vulnerability at the center, got exposure, sensitivity, and adaptive capacity in the inner circle, and then they're framing all the other issues around vulnerability, exposure, sensitivity, adaptive capacity, showing how each issue, not just climate change, affects these particular factors that go to control of vulnerability. Now, and in here, I think they really capture just about everything that's pertinent to the Southwest. The one thing that they've missed, which you couldn't expect them to get because they're not in the Southwest, is water rights and water rights issues and the Western Water Wars, as they are popularly called. So we wrote a vulnerability assessment, and I prefer to call it a review of regional vulnerabilities. And we looked at a whole bundle of crops across the region and lots in Hawaii. We didn't publish all the Hawaii crops in the final version because our 170-page document needed to be shrunk to 60 pages. Working with government sometimes is a bit constricting. So our vulnerability assessment was based on reviewing existing information. And we found that there is a lot of information available on climate change impacts. For example, you can easily go to one of the people who supply these downscale data. John Abatskavu from U of I, University of Idaho, is a popular person right now with his MACA data. And that's what we use to tell us about what's going to happen with climate in individuals or scaled down areas over our region. So we can get this measure of exposure from GCMs. And from the classical crop physiology research and newer research, we can get some ideas of how the changes in temperature and how that's distributed over the year, the changes in preset, how that interacts with the crop physiology and where crops might be moving or where they might not be able to be grown anymore, or how we can adapt to that. And we can get to our answers in adaptive capacity through those agronomic practices, which most of you guys are working on. What kind of irrigation techniques, conservation tillage, mixed cropping, and some of the information given by the previous speaker. But what we found in writing this vulnerability assessment is in the Southwest region outside of California, there's very limited research per se, just looking at vulnerabilities. or synthesis of information on vulnerability to climate. So we see this interaction of our variables important to crop growth, and we see the answers, but there is very little in the published literature that actually tackles all of this as a whole, combining it with a vulnerability assessment. And that's even at the scale of cropping systems. So we feel that using available information, and we've been told explicitly we're not allowed to do research, but our hub is based at an ARS station, so we are doing research too, but primarily focusing on available information and data. We know it's relatively straightforward to produce these qualitative reviews of vulnerability in our region, and especially those for cropping systems, but we do need this more research outside of California. But climate change is just one of a host of competing issues, and also one that not everybody, especially in the West, outside of California, accepts as real or even caused by human activities. So we do need wider consideration of a host of issues. This won't even just help with assessing how climate change interacts with those other issues, but also help to communicate on climate change and show how it fits in with existing issues. And this approach, we hope, will generate those adaptive solutions for our diverse stakeholders and also, at some point, create supporting policies in the USDA and beyond. So based on our regional review, which was very, very broad, mile wide, inch deep, we're now compiling a library of information for those local areas, those patches of red that you saw in that map. And that's the purpose of providing that locally relevant information that's tuned in to pretty much what we hope the stakeholder needs. And I should also wind back to, we're looking for stakeholder input. So any extension people in the audience or who'd like to connect later, or if you know of any engaged stakeholders who would like to inform how we do this, we'd be very, very grateful to be connected with them. Thank you.
Questions for Kate? So I think one of the main things that's coming out of this presentation was vulnerability, adaptability, resilience all has to be very site-specific. And coming from California, I can tell that the cropping systems is so different over there. The practices that farmers do under the drought is so different. And we see those impacts that has been, or the management practices impact over the time. Just for an example, like we came out of the historical unprecedented drought this year, but the amount of water that we have pumped in the last 2 years in California has brought a drastic change in the whole region. So there's a lot of land subsidence going on, a lot of other issues. It's just an example of that thing. So with that, questions, Joaquin?
A good thing or a bad thing. Well, if anyone would like to catch up later, I'll be around until Wednesday, but easily found at Las Cruces at the Jornada Experimental Range.
So I have a question, just to not just to have a question, but definitely, like, why did USDA think of clubbing all that big region together into one big clump? Like, they are so diverse.
I can't answer for that, but I must say it has been very difficult and very challenging to work with. And what we're hoping to do, there is a group of people in Hawaii, the university, the Forest Service, the ARS, and they call themselves the Pacific Islands Climate Hub, but they're not an official climate hub. But we're trying to find ways in which we can support them because we don't have the capacity to reach out there. But yes, the Southwest is pretty huge. If I had to guess, I would say, that they probably thought of us as, well, they're pretty dry, they don't have much agriculture, apart from California, and yeah, they can handle it, which is kind of encouraging in one respect, but it's one heck of a lot of work in the other.
Thank you.
Thanks, George.
Thank you. Once more, loud applause for the great presentation.